This is the Catholic Movie Guide Podcast.
So we're back on the legendary Catholic Movie Guy Podcast. I'm Steve, the Catholic Movie Guy, and this week we're going to continue with our Best of 2016 series. Last week I gave a little rundown of my top five movies. It's already changed since then. That's why I don't like doing top five movie rundowns, because, you know, you see another movie again, you reconsider, you think about a movie. Nevertheless, I definitely am sure that in my top five for the year is the movie we're going to talk about today, Hell or High Water, the 2016 film starring Jeff Bridges and Chris Pine. And to talk about it, since the Tin Man doesn't see new movies, I'm going to bring back one special guest and introduce one new special guest. And my guests this week are major celebrities, I would say.
Ooh.
Do you think that's a fair statement?
It depends on major where, like major names. I think radio is coming back as a medium. It's soon to surpass the YouTubes.
Exactly, yeah. I think it's. I think you're on the cusp of something great with this radio thing. These are Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr, my friends and the hosts of The Uncommon Good on Iowa Catholic Radio. You can give the call letters because I can never remember.
Well, KWKY, but the best way to go about it is just iowacatholicradio.com, or they can go to mchs.edu, which is for Mercy College, /UCG Uncommon Good. So that's a lot of letters, but they'll figure it out.
And everyone has heard Bo's dulcet tones on my podcast before, but we didn't have the privilege of being joined by Dr. Marr.
No, I was kind of disappointed that I missed the Rogue One talk, but I don't know, you guys, I felt like you guys did a good job with it. And
how mad did we make people? Did you get blowback from that one?
No, I think almost everybody that I have talked to has agreed with us, so I must have good listeners.
The other thing that I thought was funny is I basically did that without hearing any of your shows except the first one, and then over break I listened to every show, and I really missed some opportunities to, you know, really go with the grain of your show, so I apologize.
That's okay. Now you're ready to do that this
to get the bell rung. That's what I'm aiming to do. Figure out how to get the bell rung. We have a bell over here too, so it goes both ways.
I think you're capable. We'll see. I also want to run this by, you know, I try to get these clever nicknames for people, but you're both professors, so then I was like, well, I could call Bud the doctor and maybe Bo the reverend, because he's a campus minister. What do you think about that?
What about the master, because I have a master's degree?
Master? That's pretty rich, don't you think? I mean, come on.
Magister. What about magister?
All right, the doctor and the master. How about that?
Okay.
So anyway, the reason that these fine gentlemen are on my podcast today is that I mentioned that this movie, Hell or High Water, was one of my best of 2016 in my top five. And Bo demanded to be on this podcast, and I couldn't resist. So, Bo, why do you feel so strongly that you had to be on this podcast?
Well, A, I wasn't going to let people from stinking Missouri or Nebraska talk about a show that Oklahoma shows up in and not represent as an Oklahoman. And then B, you guys, I'm worried about your guys' Western knowledge. I feel like I'm the Western grandfather here, and I'm not going to act like I'm a specialist and know every single one, but I mean, I was the other one is I was very impressed by your guys' No Country for Old Men podcast, and I do think this evokes many of those tropes, so I knew it was going to be a good time talking to you about it.
I'm glad you brought that up, because one of my my notes for the show is like, this is like the dude playing the Sheriff Bell part in No Country for Old Men. Discuss.
Well, I'm just glad that you're not having us get into theories about whether people are in a mirror or in people's minds or something, because that one bogged down that podcast for a few hours, I think.
See,
what do you think, Bud? The dude as the sheriff, is that appropriate? I was telling Bo earlier today, I think it's one of Jeff Bridges' stronger performances in a while, and he's had good ones, so
I actually think the one where we can get to a bigger fight is if you like Jeff Bridges as Rooster Cogburn in True Grit or this. And I have mixed feelings. I really loved True Grit. Also, it takes place even more so in Oklahoma, so maybe I'm biased. But Jeff Bridges, man. All you got to do, evidently, is get old and have a gravelly voice, and then you become like an acting mastermind.
He does. He has. He has a gravitas that few people do. But I want, before we get that far afield, because I do want to circle back to westerns and comparing this one to them. I just want to give a brief plot summary for people who haven't seen it. So we're going to do most of this podcast spoiler free, and then at the very end, I do want to talk about the ending. But as a basic overview, it's set in West Texas, right? Which is close enough to Oklahoma for Bo to qualify as an honorary citizen.
Well, and they keep going into Oklahoma.
Yeah, and they're driving across it.
But filmed in New Mexico, so a little trivia for
you there. It also gave a little bit of a Breaking Bad vibe for that reason.
Oh, for sure.
But it's about, you know, two brothers who, one of them's like a career criminal, one of them's a... not a deadbeat dad, but a divorced dad who's trying to make right with his family, and they're trying to keep the family property, which is going to be foreclosed on by a bank. And what's the name of the bank? Midlands? Texas Midlands Bank?
I don't know. That sounds right.
Something like that. And the good brother, so-called, concocts a scheme to kind of bleed the bank dry by robbing, in small amounts, various branches across the region. And in so doing this, the two brothers come into a showdown with Jeff Bridges' character, whose name escapes me right now. Anyone know it off the top of the head?
I think the first name's Marcus.
That's it. Marcus. Marcus. And
Marcus.
And
Alberto Parker.
And his partner, Alberto, who, the relationship I thought of comparing it to Breaking Bad was Hank and Gomi, because Marcus is just relentlessly... peppering Alberto with like mildly racist jokes at all times, and he's taking it really well. That's like their camaraderie, I guess. But that's the basic plot.
Alberto's strong Catholic character, right?
Yes, he is. I do want to talk about, they have a particular conversation while they're chasing the two brothers that I'll get back to. But just overall, so the picture here is like, you know, the banks are really the principal villain of the film, I would argue. And then the lesser bad guys, are they really bad guys or not, are the two brothers, the bad brother Tanner and the good brother, so-called, Toby. So that theme of, like, robbing the banks because they have it coming to them, because they're going to foreclose on this property that the family desperately needs, like they've done to so many others, it definitely gives off a Robin Hood kind of vibe, which, you know, I think in Catholicism there's always been, despite the rules against stealing, which are real, you know, it's one of the Ten Commandments, there's always been a soft spot for this, like, Robin Hood type of story. So what do you think about that, the morality of what the brothers are doing here?
I mean, one thing that the film does great is that the director creates this great ethos where he really captures, with the cinematography and everything, the kind of degraded economy. And, you know, the swindling of the brothers and their bank robberies, that's set against the backdrop of the banks. And you can tell the banks have just fleeced the populace. I mean, I don't think it's heavy-handed politically, but you get a sense that, like, what the banks are doing is, you know, robbing people in a different sort of way.
And I think that the true beauty of this is, if it was just another Robin Hood movie, I could understand about it almost even being a tired trope or being overdone. The beauty of it, and something where I'm like, this really strikes home to the sort of, like, culture that they're getting at, the beauty of it is that they're going to rob the money and pay the bank off with their own money.
Exactly.
Which is beautiful, and something that West Texans or Western Oklahomans would do. It sounds like I have relatives that I think if they could have thought up of that plan, they would have tried to pull it off. And they really do catch, you know, Bubba's talking about the degradation of the sort of background. But even if those towns were in their heyday, I thought they did a really good job of capturing what small towns look like. My famous example about you can tell people have no clue what they're filming will always be Twister, which occurred mostly in Waukeeta, Oklahoma, until the very last scene where they switch somewhere in Iowa with rolling cornfields, which just makes me absolutely angry. And everyone in Oklahoma who watched this wanted to burn the theater down. I know it's in New Mexico, but they certainly make it where you can believe it's in West Texas and over the border in Oklahoma. They even, to go back, they even do a better job than True Grit, because True Grit, when they're recording that, and he starts, he's supposed to be going east
back to Arkansas, but he's clearly going north because it's getting flatter and flatter. But the Coens are so awesome, I forgave them for that one.
You know, Bo, if you had told me, if somebody told me that I'd end up talking about Twister on this Hell or High Water podcast, I would have lost that bar bet for sure. I mean,
it was bound to happen.
I honestly can't think of a worse movie to bring up on a podcast. Oh,
it's terrible.
Yeah, it is. But going back to the economic degradation of the communities. That, like, I don't know if it's the very first shot of the movie or one of the first shots where they're just, you know, kind of taking the drive down and they got the outlaw country type music in the background. By the way, the soundtrack is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
It's got your boy Billy Joe Shaver.
Yep.
It's got Nick Cave. I mean, it's just great. I want to get the soundtrack today.
Yeah.
And it fits the milieu perfectly. And when you bring up, like, True Grit and No Country for Old Men, in a lot of ways, I think, True Grit's, I mean, that's a pretty straightforward story, that one. No Country for Old Men's obviously more complicated. A lot of people accuse it of nihilism. It has a lot of similarities here. There's a definite Cormac McCarthy, the author vibe, in the background. But what do you think the moral outlook of this movie is without spoiling it? What's the moral universe of this movie?
Well, to me, the most interesting thing that they do in terms of ethics is the contrast between the brothers. Yes, Toby Howard is the ex-con, and as you watch them rob the banks, he seems to just.
I'm sorry, I thought Tanner was.
Tanner. I'm sorry. Yeah, let's not confuse the listener. So Tanner, he seems to get almost like joy out of the chaos and the robbing and the looting. He's a hedonist, and so there's a part of you on the surface where it's like, oh, this guy's the immoral one. Whereas Toby, you know, he wants to treat the patrons of the banks and things gently and make sure there's as little mayhem as possible. He also has this active concern for his boys. But as the movie goes on, you get to realize that he's kind of orchestrating the whole thing, right? I mean, is that a spoiler?
No.
Am I moving ahead too quickly?
No, that's fine.
And it's almost like he needs his brother's ability to rob banks to pull this off. But he also has this kind of like good motive in a sense. And you've already mentioned Breaking Bad, but if he can, you know, get this money and provide a certain way of life for his son, that's what's driving it. But you get the sense as the movie goes on that he thinks, I can pull this off without anyone getting hurt, without any consequences, or even it necessarily affecting his own soul.
So for me, the moral landscape is a few, I don't know if they're meaning to homage these people or not, or if it just happens naturally. One is obviously True Detective. Am I saying that right? The
yep.
one that was on HBO, the show.
Yep.
And, again, for your soul, I don't know if I can recommend that to everybody. But the sort of Matthew McConaughey's character about this guy who sort of stares nihilism in the face, but maybe in the end of it all finds a redeeming thread of life for Cormac McCarthy. That's one of them. Another is Graham Greene. Again, I don't know if any of these people have read Brighton Rock or The Power and the Glory or anything like that. You certainly get this vibe about exploring the depths of like of human sin and damnation, and looking at these characters, especially Tanner. You know, is there a way that he's like approaching grace because he accepts how damnable he is, but like is able to squeeze out like love for his brother? Is that enough to really redeem him in the end? And again, I don't know if they're meaning to do this, but there's those overtones. And then another one is the movie Unforgiven, where the character, again, both of the characters, both sides, are flawed in some ways, but there's a way in which there's the moral character, and I'm thinking Jeff Bridges' character, you know, there's no way he would ever want to be considered on the side of the banks,
right?
But you can really tell that he's like, but if everyone does this, the universe basically falls apart.
Right, it's an end to law and order.
Right. And so what you finally come up with, to me, if you want to bring up like a theological point to this, is you were talking about the sort of soft spot in the heart of Catholicism for Robin Hood characters. You know, this, of course, comes from Thomas Aquinas talking about the universal destination of ends. And to not dork out too much, all he means is that in extreme circumstances, since all goods ultimately come from God, if you're starving, you are not stealing if you go get a banana from a rich man in order to feed your family, which is a very long-established medieval and scholastic idea. Now, the boundaries of what that means, I'm
certainly I'm not saying anything silly like Thomas Aquinas would be okay with Robin Hood scenarios, but certainly this informs the movie is the banks are robbing people, and if these guys steal their money and give it back to them, it's not, I mean, you know, so like it's this open question is like, why am I getting so much enjoyment out of this scene? But there's something to it, I think.
Yeah, and I think those are all fair points, definitely. But I think that it's not just like in Robin Hood, you know, and maybe just because of medieval weaponry, it's a little different when you're in a situation where your attempt to do this, like even if you could accept that robbing from the banks to pay them back would be moral, you're endangering all these innocent people that are in the banks, and we see the consequences play out on the screen. There's a doctrine in the law, which I know you love lawyers, you know, felony murder, which is like, if you're committing a felony and someone happens to die, you're responsible even if you didn't have anything to do with it. It's kind of like that, and that's
right.
That goes back to what Bud is saying about the two brothers, because in one sense, the movie clearly paints Tanner as the bad brother and Toby as the virtuous one. In one scene, there's like a clear moment where Toby is tempted by a very fetching woman.
And
he resists it to the end, whereas Tanner shortly thereafter corrupts a seemingly innocent person just to have carnal relations with her. By the way, skip that scene, viewer.
It's not in the foreground. Can I?
I know. It's as tastefully done as a graphic nude sex scene can be.
But on
the other hand, as Bud said, Toby's the one who has orchestrated all this and planned it out, and he is responsible for the deaths of any innocents that get killed along the way too. So, the movie is it asks these moral questions, and like most good movies, it leaves it to discussion to decide how you come down on exactly who is right and who is wrong overall.
And I think that's a great point, and like that's what I would add. Of course, is this movie and seemingly Toby can throw out of all these things in the abstract. But what's the problem with like every Robin Hood scenario where we would like feel good about this happening is the dead bodies that eventually are going to happen. And, you know, Toby could wish all he wants that something like that wouldn't happen. And I think that's Jeff Bridges' character's, I mean, and of course, like you said, you don't want to spoil things, but he has personal reasons for saying very obviously, your fantasy can't play out like you want.
Right. And clearly comparing the two sides of this conflict, you have the more or less good brother, more or less bad brother. You have what I would call, like, you know, Marcus is the sheriff, but he's kind of the grizzled, cynical one. And then you have Alberto, who's like the idyllic family man, you know what I'm saying? And they have their own struggles as to how best to deal with the brothers. And I think that going back to their, like, they're staying in a hotel together, and they're watching TV, and one of these televangelists is on the TV. I don't know which one particularly. But Alberto's watching it, and Marcus says to him, this man wouldn't know God, you know, if it bit him on the leg or whatever. Something like that, a little more vulgar maybe. But the point being that both these men are seeking virtue and trying to find what right action is, and they're both, you know, in a good way disagreeing, in good faith disagreeing over it. And I think that similarly, we as the viewer can have these discussions and come to somewhat different conclusions about, you know, who were the good characters, who were the bad ones.
Yeah, to bring up our show, The Uncommon Good, it deals with Catholic social teaching. And I almost saw in Marcus's character an affirmation of subsidiarity, because there's this idea that, well, he's not looking forward to retirement, right? He wants to stave that off. And I don't know how you guys interpreted near the end of the film, but I got the sense that he sort of wanted the struggle to go on, that he didn't want this kind of contest to end. But I don't think it's because he likes the chaos or just, you know, sort of wants it to be a wild, wild west, but he realizes that the locals, in a sense, you know, like when the one guy helps him get a good spot to take a shot, mm-hmm. he realizes that they have a better sense of, like, how law and justice should operate on the ground, as opposed to the bankers or the system that's in place.
And let's all admit that the most just person of all is that waitress who's like, we only serve steak. Your only real option is between, I think it's green beans and corn.
Yeah,
and we've never served anything else. And I'm like, I've been to places like that.
Yeah, she makes them say what they're not going to order.
Yeah, right.
Via negativa, yeah. That's all.
we can have a movie just about her, as far as I'm concerned. But going back to what Bud said, I think it just popped in my head, like, Jeff Bridges' character shares a lot with Sheriff Bell, but not at the end. At the end, Jeff Bridges' character is moved to continue action despite the seeming futility of it at the end of the movie, whereas Sheriff Bell is resigned to kind of accepting, you know, his retirement. And I do think that's an interesting contrast that, I don't know, what do you guys think about that?
Well, the other, so this again brings me back to Unforgiven, which I think they're clearly evoking, and I might be wrong, but it seems to me that this is one of the homages that they're making. The sort of willingness of both characters to resign to the sides they think they have to take. If there's going to be like a critique in a sort of theological sense, you almost get this sense, like Unforgiven people basically write off as Calvinism. Have you guys seen Unforgiven? Mm-hmm.
I have. I always heard it written off as more nihilism. But I guess you could look at from a certain perspective, that could be looked at as similar.
Calvinism, if you follow it to its logical conclusion, all your Reformed fans.
Yeah.
Right.
Which I don't know. I mean, that might be unfair to Unforgiven. And again, this goes back into the sense that, you know, you don't watch movies simply because you're going to agree with them. And sometimes what the movies do well is demonstrate to you a certain worldview. Like, so for instance, Bud and I both watched Burn After Reading after you recommended it. And it's like,
I did not recommend it. In fact, I got guffed because I basically said don't watch this and then had a podcast
about it.
Oh,
you don't bring that one up. Okay.
No, I do not.
My point being is that, sure, that if you said you like that movie and you were like, no, I think it's like this great, like you should live that way, you would be like a moral person, a monster that I don't want to talk to. But if you want to say like that movie really describes a slice of America well, it can be a good movie in that way, and I think Unforgiven is like that.
Agree totally.
The same here is, I don't think that you need to watch this movie and decide. Some people were acting like it was just like a peon to the Robin Hood genre, and it was saying
it's
like,
not
like,
at
like
all.
And I think that it does a good job of saying like there's these two intractable positions, and if there's anything moral that they both, like what they both share, is their willingness to, so to speak, sink with the ships they rode in on. And that, to me, is what's very fascinating about both Toby and Marcus.
Okay. Now, I want to go a bit to like a speed round kind of thing, because we're running a little long here. First, hell or high water? Obviously, you choose high water. It's not close. Hell is much worse. Your thoughts? what kind of a choice is this? I don't even understand. Like, is
you
water
ever heard of this? Hell or high water is
right.
The country.
But my point is, come hell or a headache. You know, it's like, well, this isn't really equal.
No, but it's sort of like when people say, "The good Lord willing and the creek don't rise." Like, yeah, okay, like. Or if it's like,
it's sort of like between a rock and a hard place, like you find yourself in situations with no good options. Or
right. So hell is bad. So is high water. You've never been a farmer, evidently.
And no. I totally get it. It was just a joke. So let's go to the next section. Let's go to the next speed
purgatory.
Round.
Purgatory.
What makes this movie a Western? What makes something a Western? Just because it's set in the Western half of the United States, or just because it wrestles with themes of nihilism? What is it?
Well, since Bo's our resident Western expert, I'm going to defer to...
This comes back to... This is an iteration of your What Makes Something a Christmas Movie. I think that it has to be in the West, and like the West can be broadly defined... But the idea has to be about when humanity is faced with the expansiveness of the West. And like all the stories that we'll call Western in some regard have that sort of element to them. And so it can either be about like the good guys versus the bad guys, like out away from civilization, like High Noon. It can be nihilism, like the good, the bad, and the ugly. Or it can be this, right, that sort of when faced with the degradation of this West Texas, it's like a solution that solidifies things down to their most bare elements. Mm-hmm. And so I think the West as a background in anything you want to call a Western plays that role.
It's kind of a Borderlands theme, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, on the frontier, how do you maintain or can you maintain law and order in that context?
Is that right. A good enough answer?
I think it's very good. And final one, what do you give this movie out of 10?
You go first, bud.
I really liked it. I'd say 8 stars. Are we using stars?
Sure, you can use stars, lucky charms, whatever you want.
8 dubia.
I was hoping we'd work that onto the podcast.
I'm coming to that.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with 9 out of 10. Jeff Bridges. It's one of my favorites I've seen.
All right, and I'm gonna give it 9 out of 10. The Tim Mans. But I will not.
That's different though. That's like what's the currency exchange on that?
Yeah, the Tim Man's like the peso right now. You know what I mean? He'll love it if he actually listens to this. But,
yeah.
But yeah, I would love to, you know, continue the discussion, but I've gotten some feedback that if I cross that magical, like, 30-minute threshold, then, you know, people just fall asleep. Some of them have seizures. So we're going to have to wrap it up. But I'd love to have you guys back on soon about, you know, anything, really.
Yeah, well, I know that, like, some ideas we've thrown out is, I know you want us to watch The Room. I'll see if I can pull that off. But eventually we're going to have movies that Bob Dylan songs are in.
That's
or
awesome.
Ranking The Simpsons. But that's not really movies.
Has the Michael Bay Transformer films, have they reached a trilogy yet?
And we'll be back next week here on the Catholic Movie Guy podcast. Thanks for listening. See, bud, that was just my bell. I don't have a bell on hand, unfortunately, but anytime you mention Michael Bay Transformers, that's a bell. You're belled. You're out of here. It's over.
Whenever you're going to Mystery Science Theater Metropolitan, we'll be there.
We'll do a live recording of your reaction to that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
But before we go, dear listener, I thought maybe I'd check in with another party to see what they thought of the movie.
Hello?
Hey.
Hey, how are you?
Better now.
Aw, thanks, honey.
Pretty charming, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get that, you know, a lot. Not from other women. Sarah, I just wanted to know, do you know that movie Hell or High Water?
I do know that movie. And I stayed awake for that whole movie.
And did you like that?
I did, yes.
Did you like anything about it, particularly?
Look, it made me feel kind of funny, because it was weird. I think there was a point in the movie where we talked about how I was wanting to root for them, but in a way, you know, you really can't. But I liked all of the subject matter talked on. I thought that all of the, I felt that all of the characters felt very real. Very real.
What are you taking? Hell or high water?
I mean, I can swim, so high water it is.
Wonderful, isn't she, folks? So that's it for this week's edition of the Catholic Movie Guide Podcast. We'll be back and better than, well, back and equal to usual with the Tin Men next week. Till then, take care.